Sure Thing today. It is December 30th. Warren and Ryan here with you, the last one of 2021. We'll be back on Monday. Check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app, under the podcast section as well. Today, we will have our college football playoff preview with picks for the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl. We'll also have picks for the other bowl games going on tomorrow, Saturday, and then the one on Tuesday we'll just do today to keep it simple. Then we'll also have some NFL picks as well. So that's on the docket there. Ryan, how is it? How's it going out there? We somehow finished another year out there. It's pretty pretty wild, I guess. I don't really know. That's kind of dumb what I just said, but whatever. Wow, we finished another year. Crazy.
That's how life goes. Hey, you know, not everybody got to finish the year, so you know, that's true.
That's a lot of people ended up not finishing the year.
So you know, something to hang your hat on, something to be proud of. We have finished another year, I get what you're saying. Is you know, it kind of flew by once again, and I feel like everybody always says that. it's really true. It does. It flies by, and here we are about to enter 2022, and like you said, it's here we are.
Here we are indeed. It's the Paul Rudd meme or whatever it is.
Look at us.
Yes. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? But all right. Let's just get right into it with the college football playoffs right now. We have the Cotton Bowl tomorrow. It's the first game. Cincinnati, Alabama. Ryan, a notorious Cincinnati Bearcat fan, so he's just buzzing at the chance that they get to play Alabama tomorrow. The line is still only 13 and a half. No line movement either way, which kind of surprises me considering some of the lines you've seen from Alabama in the, like, throughout the season. When they went to A&M, they're 19-point favorites. When they played like Arkansas, they were laying 24. I mean, they've laid big lines this year, obviously, but this one's hanging right at 13 and a half, open at 13 and a half. Did that, so I'm kind of surprised there isn't some line movement. I thought it'd be a little bit maybe around the 17 range, but hey, 13 and a half, people like both sides. Obviously, I think the big thing of this matchup is going to be the secondary for Cincinnati. Highly touted secondary. They got one of the best cornerbacks in the nation there. And so we'll have to see in Ahmad Gardner, and we'll have to see how they do against Jameson Williams. Also, Kobe Bryant, spelled with a C.
And a Y. C-O-B-Y. Yes.
And a Y. Funny thing about Kobe Bryant, I actually played with his brother in Little League Baseball.
Is that right?
I did. His brother, Christian Bryant.
Shaquille O'Neal.
We went to the same middle school. He ended up going to Glenville, which is a Ted Ginn school that he went to in Cleveland. He didn't go to Brush, where we went to high school at, but we went to school with each other up until high school. We were on the same baseball team, I think, for like 13 or 14. At 13 or 14, the funniest thing was he was throwing it hard. He was like the hardest thrower of anybody at like 13 or 14. So I don't know why. I don't even know what that is. What, 70, 75, 80? I don't know.
Well, yeah, probably if 13 or 14, probably about 70, 75. Yeah.
Let me tell you, he had no clue where it was going, though.
Yeah.
He had no idea where it was going, and he could not pitch out of the stretch to save his life. So if he walked a guy, that guy was on third base immediately because he just didn't know how to pitch out of the stretch. But he could turn a single into a double. I mean, there was one thing. He turned a single into a double. I don't know how he did it. He was also at that age like a top 400. He was like top five in the nation for 400 meters for track. I mean, the kid was just an all-around amazing athlete. He ended up playing safety at Ohio State. And the NCAA really, really hosed him because he broke his ankle like sixth game in his senior year. And normally you could apply for a medical redshirt for the next year. And he did that so he could come back. And then like he was probably going to be like a mid to late round pick in the NFL. NCAA denied him that redshirt. So he had to go in the NFL
the combine and everything on a broken ankle, and he just was like a seventh round pick, was on the St. Louis Rams practice squad for a year and then fizzled out. But he really got hosed, I think, by the NCAA. But his brother's a safety for Cincinnati. Really good one as well. So they're going to have to match up against the Alabama receivers. And I do think it's a big deal that John Mechie's out, because you saw in the Auburn game, Williams was out the second half or whenever he was out with the targeting, and their offense really couldn't do anything. So both of those guys are so dynamic, and when you miss one, it leaves you to focus on the other guy a little bit more. And I know they still got other good receivers there. Obviously, it's Alabama, but like the two top guys out, only having one of them there, I think that helps Cincinnati a little bit if they want to keep this game close.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, Mechie was arguably their top guy all season long. Obviously, Jameson Williams has been very, very good as well. And, you know, kind of one of those stories of how does he get out of Ohio State? I mean, I get it. They had some big time guys ahead of him. But the things he's done at Alabama this season, it's like, man, this guy, you know, every team should want this guy. I'm sure every team does. But, you know, the fact that he couldn't get on the field for Ohio State is mind boggling. But I think the biggest thing for Cincinnati is stopping the Alabama defense, the Alabama pass rush. You know, they've been able to get after the quarterback pretty well as of late. Will Anderson has been just an absolute terror, and he's a guy that's coming off the edge a lot from that linebacker position and causing problems in the backfield over and over and over again. So if they can find a way to keep, I think especially Will Anderson at bay, or kind of keep him to a light load, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, not causing too much of an issue, that'll absolutely give him a better chance and give him a better shot at this thing. But all in all, like I said, when you get two good football teams, and Cincinnati is a good football team, let's not, you know, I've said that numerous times, but usually the better athletes are going to win. And I think that's the side wearing the crimson and white that's going to be the better athletes in this game.
Yeah, no, look, I don't think anybody's denying that Alabama is the better team over Cincinnati, and they have the better athletes. I do also wonder, that's the last year they played Georgia in the Peach Bowl, and they lost by like three. It was a close game. I know Georgia had opt-outs in that game, but still, like, they did play an SEC game, and you could also say how motivated was Georgia to play in the Peach Bowl after they were hoping to make the playoff. They didn't, all that stuff. But you still went up against an SEC team. You got to see the second most talented, if not the most talented team in the SEC, how they are, their speed-wise and everything. I know it was a year ago, but this is pretty much the same Cincinnati team from last year. So they have that going on. They did this year play Notre Dame, physical team. But clearly the game obviously is going to be won in the trenches, and I think you'd have to give that advantage to Alabama just with the speed and size. But you never know. Look, crazier things have happened. I don't think Alabama – or Cincinnati is going to win the game, but look, I hope this is actually like
this a little competitive,
huh?
A little competitive.
Yeah, I hope so, because then because you could already see the narrative of going of like, oh, Cincinnati was in, like, no, here's no other team has an argument to be the fourth team. I think like a team that has an argument is Ohio State, but they lost two games. I think everybody would say Ohio State's probably one of the four best teams in the country. Well, they didn't qualify. They didn't meet the criteria to qualify this year. Notre Dame, they lost to Cincinnati.
Correct.
Baylor, they have two losses. No team has a gripe to be like the fourth team in this year. So these were the four teams that were most deserving and the best. So they are in there. So there's no like, oh, you know what? We could have had this team and they wouldn't have got blown out. But the problem is, if they get blown out, then this is going to set the precedent for, you know what? We can never allow another group of five school team ever in this game. Well, what if they go undefeated and they have the same resume as Cincinnati and the same thing pans out, or they have a better resume? Like, the whole football season is like, it's one, and then you need to forget what happens like last year. When you're talking about this year, like, whatever happens at Cincinnati shouldn't hold back the group of five schools going forward. But if they get just boat raced, which, as we've talked about many of times, a lot of these semifinals are boat races and they're blowouts and they're just not entertaining games. that's going to carry the things for the group of five schools. And you could already see that probably going to be happening if they get down, what, 14 early on. Like, oh, you know what? We're done here. You could see that coming.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's absolutely going to happen because college football and college football fans are just, you know, kind of dumb brains sometimes. And, you know, one thing automatically leads to another. So if Cincinnati comes out here and, like you said, gets absolutely boat raced, any other time there's a group of five team that belongs, you know, that you can make an argument for the resume, you know, that's exactly what they're going to revert to. And look, I, to a degree, and I've argued on this show too, that I don't know that a group of five school does belong unless they go in and beat a couple power five schools. Now, Cincinnati was able to do that this year. So, you know, say what you will, like you said, there really isn't another team that you can make an argument for to be in that fourth spot. So I think Cincinnati absolutely does deserve it based on their resume and based on kind of what happened around them. But, you know, even so going forward, I just don't know how many group of five teams are going to be in the same position Cincinnati is, where, you know, again, we've talked about how the season prior shouldn't come into play of what's happening this season. And the committee has said that they try not to take that into consideration. But the fact that Cincinnati did go undefeated last year and had a good showing in their bowl game and then comes in this year and does the exact same thing while beating a couple power five teams. Look, you got to tip your hat to them and say, hey, look, this is a good football team. And maybe they do belong in the top four, and let's see what they can do against the big boys.
Yeah. And also, so this year's quarterback class, I'd say, is pretty down. Like Kenny Pickett, he's a fine quarterback, but I don't, if you're looking at last year's class, he would probably go, I don't know, he'd probably be rated like fourth or fifth, I would say. I don't know. Matt Corral's decent. I look from a pro prospects, everybody's saying this class is way down, but if Desmond Ridder, he's one of the guys that I would say is considered, has a pro career ahead of him or is going to get drafted. Like if he plays well against this Alabama defense, he could definitely make a lot of money in this game tomorrow. If he plays well, they lose a close one. He shows he's making good throws. He's able to handle the pressure that he's probably going to be under against with the defensive line and Will Anderson and all that stuff. If he plays well, he's a guy that can really, really improve his draft stock there if he has a good game against Alabama tomorrow. Because I mean, really, look, all these guys like Sam Howell, Corral, Kenny Pickett, they're all really the same type of dude. They're all the same type of guy. No one has separated himself. Carson Strong, I guess, no one's really separated themselves with like the clear-cut guy. If Desmond Ridder goes out and goes toe-to-toe with the Alabama defense and goes toe-to-toe with Bryce Young, the Heisman winner, he's gonna set himself up for a nice payday, I would say.
Yeah, no doubt. Especially then, against big time competition, because that's always the knock against these smaller school guys is, well, who do they play? And if you go up and have a good game against, you know, the best team in the nation, you're going to set yourself apart there for sure.
Yeah. And then one last thing on this is, so going into the Georgia game, the Alabama, me and a bunch of people, why we thought Alabama were going to lose or struggle against Georgia was because against Arkansas, LSU and Auburn, the offensive line was absolutely getting manhandled. They were just getting destroyed. Bryce Young had no time to throw, and he's terrible when he's under pressure. Well, the offensive line had the best game of the season out of nowhere. It was really out of the blue, that offensive line. So was that just a Saban tactics of using the, hey, we're underdogs in this game, nobody believes in us, everybody is against us, that let's play it up? Or did they actually find something on the offensive line there? Obviously, Cincinnati doesn't have the same type of athletes on the front line as those other three teams in the SEC. But is the offensive line, did they find something, or was that just a mirage? I don't know. It's probably a little bit. They're definitely going to find something. They're going up against a little lesser talent-wise. But is the Alabama offensive line going to be able to play as well as they did against Georgia? I still think that is a little bit of a question mark there, because one game, the last game they did play was great, but before that, they were not very good.
Yeah, no, I'd absolutely agree. I think you hit all the main points there. You know, you got to go in looking to kind of, like you said, the last matchup didn't go as good. So you got to kind of have a short-term memory and just go into this with brand new outlook and make sure you just get the job done, do your job. You know, it sounds simple, it sounds stupid, and it's kind of an old cliche when it comes to sports, you know, but again, you have a short memory, forget about what happened last time, and try to right the wrong that you feel like you might have had last go around.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what goes on there. But that's the game tomorrow, 2:30 at the at Cowboy Stadium. So we'll have to see what happens there. Looking forward to that. Then the nightcapper is Georgia and Michigan. Obviously, the more intriguing game. Both games are very intriguing, but the line still 7.5, got up to 8 for
intriguing for different reasons, I would say.
Yeah, because look, Michigan has been, you could say, the hottest team as they've been playing the best football the last month. Mm-hmm. Georgia, what, do you disagree with that or not?
No, I said yeah. I said, mm-hmm.
Oh, like, sorry. And then Georgia, they steamrolled everybody until the SEC championship game. And everybody just remembers how poor they played against Alabama. And you have that taste in your mouth. Then you look at Michigan, then beating Ohio State, and then dominating a bad Iowa team. I mean, 7.5 seems like a lot of points in this game. I really have no idea what's going on in this one. The key to me is going to be Aiden Hutchinson. And I talked about this when they played Ohio State, but Ojabo too. David Ojabo, the two ends for Michigan. You saw how well or how poorly Georgia handled Will Anderson and the defensive line for Alabama. These guys are just as good, if not better, as a group. I really do think it comes down to that. I really have no idea who's going to win this game. I'm going to take the points with Alabama, with Michigan, but I mean, I think this is close to a coin flip game.
Totally agree. That's why I was surprised that this number was so big. I think it's absolutely a coin flip game. You know, I would see this more as maybe right around, I don't know, maybe between 1.5 and 3 points. You know, it's come down a little bit. I think it opened at 8. I think it's, you know, you said it's right around 7.5 now. So a little bit of movement there. But I was completely shocked because I think these teams are pretty evenly matched. They both kind of do the same stuff, and they do both do the same stuff well. So I don't know what gives, you know, what Vegas sees that they think that Georgia has this big advantage over Michigan. Because like you said, I think Michigan is one of the hotter teams in college football right now, and they're playing well. They got the, you know, all systems rolling right now. Everything's kind of cooking. Obviously, like you said, the Aiden Hutchinson thing. They have a two-headed monster in the backfield running the ball. So it's, you know, Michigan, I think, is a very, very good team. And I think they could be the team that wins it all. And I don't know if that's recency bias because, you know, they played well against Ohio State. They had a great showing in the championship game. But they just have one of those feels of a team that is just getting hot at the right time. Now, again, they've been good all year, but they're getting, like, you know, really, really cooking things up right now. And, you know, hopefully the layoff of a couple weeks doesn't kind of extinguish the fire there for them.
Yeah, I also do. I do think a little bit of Michigan is the recency bias, though. I think there is a little bit of that, but they also have been playing very good. And the offense, are they going to, like, the Georgia defense, you got to think they're going to play better than what they did against Alabama.
Yeah.
And they don't have the passing attack as they do that Alabama has. Michigan has definitely run the ball. Jordan Davis, how's he going to be able to do? And the Hassan Haskins, he's the Michigan running back. He's been a great running back this year. So how are they going to be able to handle that? Because I think if Michigan gets down, say, if Georgia gets up 10 early, even they get up like 2 touchdowns kind of early, I think it's going to be hard for Michigan to throw themselves back into the game. Mm-hmm. Like, because, I mean, Georgia was up 10-0 against Alabama, and then Alabama threw their way all the way back into the game. I don't think Michigan can really do that. They're more of a built to play from ahead. I mean, look at the Ohio State game. They were pretty much ahead the whole game. I think they were down maybe 1 point. 14-13 at one point, but they were, and even then, that's pretty much a tie game. It's, so they didn't have to really come far from behind. I don't think they're really built to come from behind from a multiple score deficit. They have to play from ahead. That's their style. So if they get down early, I'd be a little cautious if Michigan has the firepower to come back.
100% agree. Like I said, the two-headed monster in the backfield of running the ball, they got to get ahead, stay ahead. They really got to put pressure on you defensively with Michigan. You know, the what's the Michigan's quarterback's name right now? It's slipping my mind. He's been playing well, but he's not the type of guy that is going to, like you said, throw you back into a game or be able. I don't even know if they're, you know, if this game shapes up to be kind of a shootout. I don't know if Michigan really has the firepower to. Is it Cade McNamara?
Yeah, it's Cade McNamara.
I don't know that they have the firepower to really do that either, where they, you know, they really rely on old school football, you know, pound the rock, run the ball, and then go play defense and play hard-nosed defense and get after the quarterback, get after the ball carrier. So, if which Georgia, to me, they're really not the team to you know, we saw against Alabama, they got down early, and it was really, really didn't ever feel like they had a shot to get back in it. So, you know, it goes both ways with these teams. Again, like I said, they're very, very similar in style, very similar in even philosophy of how they play the game. So, you know, again, still have a head scratcher why Georgia's, you know, more than a touchdown favorite against Michigan.
Well, I don't know if it's really a head scratcher. If you just go by power rankings and probably the advanced models and the metrics and stuff, they're probably ended up being, all these models end up being around a 7.5 point favorite. And again, like the Cincinnati thing, if it's staying there, like Vegas sets the number of what they think is going to get money on both sides. Obviously, you know that. Correct. So obviously they're getting money on both sides if the line has stayed the same and it's not moving. So they're obviously doing something right there, I would have to say.
No doubt. No, yeah, totally agree.
I mean, you look the S&P Plus overall rankings, they still have Georgia number one, and they have the number one defense, the second best offense. Michigan's got the seventh best defense and the 17th ranked offense. So the ratings is 33.8. Michigan's is 24.8 when you kind of do everything out there. So it's not, I mean, I just think probably with all the metrics and everything, they think they're about 7 points better. So that's where it's at now. I also do wonder, so this, obviously Georgia's been in this spot before. You could say that they normally fail in the spot, or they have failed against Alabama in this spot. But Michigan, this is a totally, totally new stratosphere that they're in. Obviously, they've never made it here before. This is their first Big Ten championship title. And I just wonder if I don't know if the lights are too bright or something, but I don't know. I just think there's a chance that Michigan could also just, they just were not ready for this, and they played well down the stretch, the time off, and here they are now that they just, they've been reading their press clippings about how good they are for a month and forgot that they got to play the game.
Yeah, I don't know that I totally agree with that. You know, I'll push back on that a little bit because of Harbaugh. I mean, the guy has coached in Super Bowls. He was on, you know, great NFL teams as a quarterback, albeit a backup. So he's been in big spots. So he knows how to prepare guys for big spots. And, you know, like you said, Kirby Smart. Well, you didn't say Kirby Smart specifically, but you said Georgia has failed in these spots before. And, you know, with Kirby being a part of, you know, some of those failures recently, that those things kind of maybe creep in the back of your mind and you start second guessing yourself and doubting yourself a little bit, where Harbaugh to me just doesn't seem like the type of guy that's going to second guess himself. He's going to make a decision. He's going to stick with it. And that's just kind of how he's going to do things. I don't really know your feelings on Harbaugh, him being a Michigan guy. I don't know if you know, dislike him or not for whatever reasons, but you know, I think that's a guy that players want to play for. You know, he's going to be a guy that has your back. He's going to be a guy that teaches you. He's going to be a guy that tries to get you better, not for his own personal game, but for yours. Also too, adding, because if you are a good player, well then who does that make look good? It's Harbaugh. You know what I mean? So, we've seen and heard all the stories about how competitive he is and how he, you know, loves the game and gets after it still to this day. So I think if there's going to be a coach that takes a team that doesn't have experience in this big spot and can get them ready, I think it's Harbaugh and Michigan.
Then the counter to that would be, well, Jim Harbaugh really at Michigan has been terrible in big spots.
True.
Up until this year. Like the body of work over his 5 years at Michigan up until really only beating Ohio State. He blew a 2-touchdown lead against Michigan State earlier this year. Like, he's beaten his rivals twice or three times combined when you include Michigan State and Ohio State. And he's got,
yeah, no, that's a fair argument.
He's lost to Penn State when they've had better teams. Like, he just, against better teams up until really Ohio State this year, has not performed well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would say, is that Jim Harbaugh's competed better in one game when he's been an underdog. It was at home in the snow. And yeah, that's what I would say is that he has really not proved anything other than the Ohio State game this year, that he's able to be a big game coach at Michigan. So that would be the counter to that. Like, yeah, obviously in the NFL he proved that, and yes, he has experience, but at Michigan he hasn't proven that he's able to win a big game other than one, and he's blown multiple where he should have won down the stretch. So that's what I would push back, that would be the counter to that. All right, let's get some picks with starting with the games tomorrow. Bowl season, I did my record. I'm 8-7 in bowl season. I would like to add, I bet this earlier, UNC -10 for today. And who knows, maybe on Twitter I'll add some more picks. But tomorrow's game, I am going to take Washington State -7. This seems like, 7 points doesn't seem like enough against a MAC school. I know Central can score a lot. They're excited that both teams are playing in this game. Central's excited because their game was on the verge of getting postponed, or Boise was out, and then Washington State didn't know if they were going to play. So they two cancellation of bowl games, they were able to make it work because of travel. But I'm going to take Washington State -7 in that one. I'm going to take, I had the over in Cincinnati, Alabama, but I got off that. No pick in that game. I think Alabama -13 is definitely the play, but I'll lay off of that. And then I have Michigan +7.5. New Year's Day, got a lot of games there. I'm going to take Penn State +2 against Arkansas. I might start off 2022 with a game of the year.
Oh, wow.
And that's Kentucky -3 against Iowa.
Yeah.
Like, you want to talk about a line that doesn't make sense. Iowa cannot score. They cannot score. And the SEC is yet to win a current SEC member is yet to win a bowl game this year. Their future member has won their first game last night, but the SEC has yet to win a bowl game. So maybe that comes today in the Music City Bowl or in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, but they haven't won a game yet. I just don't know how Iowa is able to score with Kentucky. I'm going to take Oklahoma State +2.5 against Notre Dame. The over in Ohio State, 64.5, and if I wasn't an Ohio State fan, I'd sprinkle Utah money line. Not because Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave are out, but there's like two guys that are starters on the defensive line that are out, that are opted out, and we all know how bad Ohio State's run defense is this year, and Utah's got a great rushing offense, so I think the Buckeyes are in store for a tough one on Saturday. And then Tuesday, I'm going to take Kansas State -3.5. I don't have a pick in the Sugar Bowl, leaning under, but no pick in that one.
All right. So right now, my bowl record is sitting at 13-4. I had the Oregon OU over yesterday. That hit in the third quarter. That was nice. I wasn't sure if Oregon was going to score enough points to get us there, but they ended up picking it up in the second half.
I live bet that.
Uh-huh.
And went to bed and was like, I don't know if I'm gonna wake up and there's gonna be 20 more points. I woke up and saw the score. I was like, whoa,
nice. Not only that, but then all of a sudden, if you had OU -7, you were sweating there at the end, seeing if you could get to the finish line with them covering. So I originally had Rutgers I think at the time it was +14 on the card. I took that off. I'm getting off of that one. Probably, maybe got a little over my skis on that one, but we're definitely getting rid of that one. I'm on Michigan State -2.5 against Pitt. I'm on Central Michigan +7 against Washington State. I'm also going to take the over in that game, 57.5. I don't have a pick in the Cotton Bowl either. Like you said, I think Bama is the play there. I'm not confident that they'll be able to cover for sure. I think they went outright, but I just don't know about the two touchdown cushion that they're giving. I'm also on Michigan plus. I had them at plus 8 on Monday or Tuesday, whenever that was that we recorded, but I'll bump that down to 7.5 now, just so we're keeping it all even. Arkansas -2. I like Notre Dame -2 as well. I'm going to go ahead and take Ohio State -4. Utah State has burned me a couple times. Utah has burned me a couple times. They both times against Oregon that they played, I faded them and they ended up coming back and biting me in the butt. So I'm going to go against them one last time. Maybe see if third time's a charm with, fading Utah, and I'll ride with Ohio State. I know you had different feelings. I'm taking Baylor +1 in the Sugar Bowl against Ole Miss. Tuesday's game, the Texas Bowl, I really don't have a pick right now. Maybe I'll add it later, but as it stands, not really, just laying off that game altogether.
Gotcha. I also think, I'm not saying Ohio State is not jazzed to play in the Rose Bowl, because obviously if you're not playing in the playoff, the next best game, probably biased, but the Rose Bowl is the next best bowl game going out there. So it's easy to get hyped up for it, but also this is Utah, the first time they've ever made the Rose Bowl, and their fans are jazzed up. They're going to be out there in full force. There's just a lot of more excitement on the Utah side for this game than the Ohio State side, because it pains me to say it, because the Rose Bowl is great, but like the only time you want to play in the Rose Bowl if you're Ohio State is when it's the semifinal. Like last year was when it was a semifinal, they ended up playing here in Dallas. But like when it's a semifinal, that's when you want to play in the Rose Bowl. You don't want to play in the Rose Bowl when it's not a playoff game there. But still exciting. And I've said this for multiple years. I think every national championship game should be played at the Rose Bowl for college football. People probably disagree with me on that, but I think every national championship game should be played at the Rose Bowl.
The only problem with that is the championship starts so late that you don't get the golden hour and the sun setting on the mountains in the stadium. That'd be my only pushback, because that's kind of what makes the Rose Bowl. Not what makes the Rose Bowl. That's part of the aura of the Rose Bowl.
No, it is. But honestly, I don't really care. I still think the Rose Bowl is a great setting for a college football game anyways. Every championship game should be played there. I also think, I know the NFL is not going to do that. They should put the Super Bowl back at the Rose Bowl one of these years. I know, but they don't have the suites for the hospitality or anything like that, but let's get back to the nitty gritty. Let's throw the Super Bowl out at the Rose Bowl one year to see what's going on. All right, to the NFL this week. We are down to the nitty gritty. Week 17, but not the last week of the season. We got one more week next week. As they've been hyping up, what do they say? It's the biggest regular season ever or something?
Something like that, yeah.
They're true. It's true because they're playing more games. Lots of important games this week. The Cowboys, as we talked about a little bit on Monday or Tuesday. Interesting test against Arizona. Arizona definitely is not playing as well as they've have been the beginning of the season. Everybody wants to see now if Dallas is going to be able to continue the momentum they have from the beatdown that they gave Washington on Sunday night, especially the offense. The defense has still been there. And, I mean, Kyler, I don't think Kyler has ever lost at AT&T Stadium, because they played last year on Monday night. They won. In college, he won every game that he played there. So I don't think he's ever lost at AT&T Stadium. So maybe this will be the first time he lost. Maybe he wins. I think this is an interesting team. You got a team that's been struggling against a team that played one good game against an inferior opponent. And kind of what happens here? Dallas is -5.5. I think Dallas should win by about a touchdown, if not more. But I don't really know. We see crazy, crazy turnover in the NFL week to week.
100%, 100%. Especially, like you said, the Cowboys have been playing really well as of late. But again, you take a look at who they've played, and you know, you look at New Orleans, like, okay, that's a decent win. But then you remember that Taysom Hill broke his finger or had a hammer finger or something in the middle of that game. And then they go Washington, Giants, Washington, two bad teams. Washington maybe not as bad as the Giants, but just didn't play very well at all. So even though they have been good and they've had good showings, it has been against bad teams. So you want to see what they can do against a team, like you said, that's reeling right now in Arizona, that started off hotter than, you know, fire, but now they're kind of coming down back to earth. So now right now they're hungry. They're looking for a win. They're looking to right the ship and kind of, you know, they don't want to be backing into the playoffs. They want to be going in full steam ahead. So it's definitely going to be an interesting game for both teams. You know, you see what the Cowboys can do against a better opponent in the Cardinals. And you want to see if the Cardinals can right the ship against a really, really good defense. And not having their number one wide receiver in D-Hop, you know, is going to hurt, especially with the way that secondary for the Cowboys has been playing.
Yeah, no, it has for sure. And I mean, I said this the other day, but like, if Kyler's such a good quarterback, I know everybody when they lose their number one receiver, it's bad, but they still got other decent weapons there. Christian Kirk, they traded for Zach Ertz. They got, I had to think Rondell Moore's been hurt, so that hurts a little bit, but like, they still got other guys there. You should be able to work around that. James Conner's been having an amazing season.
He was out last game though.
No, I know, but still, he's been great. They have Chase Edmonds back. I know they still got weapons there. They should be able to be a little bit better offensively. And the one thing I think we still need to watch with the Cowboys going forward is that offensive line.
Yeah.
And Chandler Jones this week is going to get a shot at Dak, because we did still see Washington get some pressures early on against Dak. We obviously saw what they did a couple weeks ago. I just still think that they're... the offensive line is a little shaky and Dak could come under pressure. So this Arizona defensive line, pretty good. Are they going to be able to create, are they going to be able to handle the Cardinals defensive line, which is, I would say, one of the weaknesses that the Cowboys have in addition to the rush defense. If Connor's back and Edmonds, are they going to be able are they going to be able to stop the runs? Those are the two big questions I still have on the Cowboys. And you might get a decent answer from that today.
Yeah, no. Sunday. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely agree. Again, I could see this game going either way as well. Like you said you could see the Cowboys winning by a touchdown. I could see that. I could see it being a blowout, and I could see the Cardinals squeaking this one out. This game to me is kind of a bit of a toss up. But when you get two good teams, I think these are two good teams. The Cardinals are just, like I said, reeling a little bit right now. I think it's going to be a game till the end, and we'll see who comes out on top. But it's just, if handicapping this game, the Cardinals at 5 points, that's probably pretty close or pretty, accurate of what I think it should be. But again, I wouldn't be totally surprised if the Cardinals go out there and kind of find their groove again and win this game outright.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be either. All right, I would say the biggest game of the weekend after this one is, well, it's up in the air. If Sam Ehlinger starts on Sunday, that's the biggest game of the weekend.
Absolutely, 100% it is.
Against Derek Carr and the Raiders?
I mean, baby, we're right here. Look, comes down to it. It took 16, 17 weeks. Longer than that, going back to last year when I was talking about Sam Ehlinger, but here we are, the Ehlinger Carr Bowl.
Potential.
And if the football gods have any pity on my soul after what has happened with Washington, they will give me this game. They will give me this game. If I've done everything right, if they have any mercy on me, the football gods will give me the Ehlinger versus Derek Carr game.
They will. I will say, look, if you're a Colts fan right now, I think you have to be so upset at Carson Wentz. You have turned the corner from a terrible start. You are in the playoff hunt, in prime position for a playoff position. And you knew this guy was going to be unvaccinated going into the season. And now here he is. Now the rules have been changed with other guidelines. So this is helping him for a chance to play on Sunday. But this is like the ultimate letting your team down. And I said this back in the summer when we were talking about this, that like any player that says they'll do anything to help their team win and they're an unvaccinated player, unless they have a reasonable health condition, that they've talked to their doctor about before. Don't think Carson Wentz has that. Don't think Cole Beasley. Don't think all these guys that have been unvaccinated have had that. They are liars to you. And God, I would be so pissed if I'm a Colts fan and you lose this game with Sam Ehlinger at quarterback and can hinder your playoff chances because this guy didn't, his decision is costing you the for the greater good of the team. That if he doesn't play on Sunday, I would be furious with him. And a couple of my buddies have been talking about it. It's mainly, look, if you're a quarterback, I would feel like it should have been a requirement for you to get vaccinated with Cousins and all these guys. And I know vaccinated QBs have missed, but you know what? That's fine. They can't really do anything about it. Maybe they shouldn't have gone out to a community event or gone to a restaurant. Somebody could look back at that. But they did. Other than that, they did everything to protect themselves. But man, you're trying to lead this team, and the biggest risk you have, you can kind of subside the chance of getting it. Boy, I would be absolutely furious if I was a Colts fan, maybe even a player, I'd be pretty upset.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Colts fan, you should probably be pretty happy because you're getting a better quarterback.
No, you're not. Carson Wentz has won them games.
No, it is what it is. He made his decision, and now he's got to deal with whatever consequences that may be, whether that's him sitting out Sunday or not. But like you said, I mean, there's vaccinated quarterbacks that have missed games too. So they've made poor decisions where they've put themselves in spots where they either contract the virus or close contacts or whatever the case may be. So it looks like regardless of what your decision was, whether it was to be vaxxed or not, you were going to miss games. So, you know, they've changed the rules now. So he's able to get back in, with a couple negative tests right before Sunday. And, you know, if that's the case, then it looks like it didn't hurt anything to begin with. So we'd all be right back at square one. So, kind of keeping it back between the lines, you absolutely want your number one quarterback out there, and you want the guy that's been playing much, much better than people were going to give him credit for coming into the season. And he hasn't, made a ton of mistakes turning the ball over like we saw his last year in Philadelphia. And so that's put him in a good spot. He's really only had to be really a game manager with as good as Jonathan Taylor's been. And so if Sam Ehlinger ends up starting and he ends up having to be that guy, I think that's a perfect role for a rookie quarterback coming in.
Yeah, because he just has to do the Mac Jones, hand it off the whole time, and then you get the credit for doing nothing.
100%. Then you let Derek Carr throw himself out of the game, and boom, Sam Ehlinger's
back. I don't know if I throw Derek Carr doesn't throw himself out of the game. I'll tell you what, the scariest quarterback when you need a field goal down late is Derek Carr. Going against him?
I don't know that I would agree with that, but all right.
Look at his record. Look at how many game-winning drives he has down the stretch. He plays great when in that situation.
I'm not saying that he doesn't, but the most dangerous, I mean,
one of them, I would have to say, he leads multiple game winning drives.
I agree. If you need a field goal, he might be one of the top 10 guys you pick. You need a touchdown? I don't know about that.
That's fine, but I said field goal.
I agree. I got you.
Derek Carr would be great in Washington. That would be a good fit. That would be a good offseason move.
Look,
that's an upgrade and a half.
That's it. I don't disagree. And earlier this season, I backed off the Derek Carr hate a little bit. But not enough to where I want that guy to be my quarterback, because the number that we're going to have to pay him is going to be much, much higher than he's worth, because that's the going rate, which is fine. I get it. The market's dictating that number, but that's not a number I want to pay a guy like Derek Carr. I'd rather take my chances with a rookie.
All right. All right. Picks. Last week I was 3-2. We've just been kind of hanging around 500 the last month or so. Now I'm 47-33 on the season. So still having a good year. Still having a good season. Picks this week, boy, this is tough.
It's brutal weekend.
It's a tough weekend. There's a lot of good teams playing a lot of bad teams. So do you lay the double digits there? What do you do? Who really knows? The line that really doesn't make sense to me. How is Tennessee -3.5 against Miami?
Yeah, I don't know.
That doesn't matter. I know Miami's won 7 in a row, but they've had one team with a winning record in that. This is a tough week, but I'm going to take Tennessee -3.5 against Miami. I'm going to take the Rams against the Ravens -3.5. I'm just going to keep fading the Ravens as we go down the, as we go down the stretch here, I'm going to take the Raiders +6.5. I think they'll be able to keep it. I said that. I don't really know if I like that. I'm going to stay off the Raiders there. I'm going to take Detroit +7 on the road against Seattle. Seattle, I thought they could make a run when Russ came back. You read all the quotes there. Russ has probably gone. Bobby Wagner's like, I got to figure out where I'm going, if I'm going to be here. Turmoil. Well, big shakeup in Seattle. So I'm going to take them +7, the Lions +7. I'm gonna take the Steelers +3.5 on Monday night. Big Ben said it's his last game. This is really just a Houdini act on my part to get the Browns a meaningful Week 18 game, but I don't know. They'll probably get drilled because it's Big Ben's last game. A lot of emotion there. And then I am going to take, I'll take the Patriots -15 against the Jaguars. I think the Jags kind of mailed it in. So those are my five picks for the week.
All right, so I'm also on the Lions +7 against Seattle for much of the reasons that you mentioned. The Seahawks just, they stink right now, and the Lions stink too, but they play a lot harder than most teams in their position. So I'm going to take Detroit +7. Wouldn't be surprised if this was an outright win for Detroit. I am taking the Raiders +6.5. I do think they keep it close, I don't know that they win the game outright. If Carson Wentz plays, the Raiders probably do win it outright. If Sam Ellinger plays, they probably don't. So I guess we'll see there. I'm going to ride with Chicago -6 against the Giants. The Giants are just so, so, so bad. I think they're literally the worst team in the last 5 years, record-wise. I don't know if it's Fields or Foles or who's playing quarterback for the Bears, but this is mainly me just picking against the Giants because they stink so bad.
Oh, who's playing quarterback for the Giants?
Exactly. Is it? Yeah. Another good question. You know, pick your poison. Whoever, the worst of the three or the best of the worst, whatever you want to call it. I am taking Green Bay -6.5. This is me fading Kirk Cousins in prime time and backing Aaron Rodgers. They got things rolling as things are coming to an end here in Green Bay for him. And I am going to take Cleveland, part of Believeland, for this week, -3 against Pittsburgh. I think Chubb gets things going. I think, I don't know if Kareem Hunt's going to be back fully. I know he's questionable to play, but either way, I like Dearness Johnson back there. And, maybe Baker can have a decent game to kind of keep them in this thing and get a win against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh just isn't very good right now. And I know you said Big Ben, he's going to have a lot of emotion. He's going to be out there playing his last game in Pittsburgh, but I still think Believeland gets it done.
Look, the Browns should win the game. They should have won the first game. Pittsburgh's terrible. They're terrible. And you know what? I think the Browns really should do this from the start. Whoever the running, Dearness Johnson, if it's Kareem Hunt, Chubb. When T.J. Watt is lined up, maybe the tight end, when T.J. Watt's lined up on that by the left tackle, give him a nice little chip shot right to the ribs. He's got those cracked ribs. He'll be out for about 3 series. So. Mm. Do that to your advantage because he's not a true warrior like Myles Garrett, who's playing with the busted groin out there. Seriously, like Myles Garrett really did nothing on Christmas Day, but the fact that he was out there playing on a bad groin on like 4 days rest was like, it was a pretty impressive and a gritty performance from Myles Garrett. But all right, one last thing here is that Tuesday night was that was when John Madden passed away. Mm-hmm. Tuesday night to John, I didn't have a chance to watch the All Men documentary, but I was going to plan on it. It's already out on bumped up the streaming things for it. I think Fox is replaying it tonight at 7 o'clock our time. It's been on FS1, but the John Madden, a true icon of football. He was a coach, broadcaster, obviously the video game, so he does the whole gamut. They asked him to do the video game, so he did that. And I tweeted this out. I looked at ESPN, said, oh, it took him into 2006 to be in the Hall of Fame, and I was like, God, that seems crazy. John Madden, like, what a great coach. He had to get selected by the Veterans Committee to get inducted into the Hall of Fame as a coach. The man is the highest winning percentage in NFL history at 73%, with a minimum of 100 games. I know he only coached for 10 seasons and then decided to hang it up. Went to I think six conference championship games, lost five, won a Super Bowl, went to like five in a row, I think lost all five, but still making it there. Unbelievable that, and this shows probably what a flawed process the Pro Football Hall of Fame process was back then, and even what it is now, that he went in as a broadcaster when he was currently broadcasting in 2002, and then 4 years later as a coach he went in. Like, how did it take him so long to get in as a coach, as a veterans committee? I don't know. I was shocked by that, but it's sad that he's gone because he was such an icon for football. And then a span of generations, as many people have already been saying, they know him for different things. Like, my dad obviously knows him as a coach and then a broadcaster. I know him as a broadcaster and then with the video game, and then kids now growing up know him from the video game. So he runs a gamut of football.
Yeah, no, definitely one of the greats to ever grace the game of football. And honestly, I don't know if this is quite an overstatement. I know fantasy football has a lot to do with the explosion of the NFL and the popularity of the game, but how much of it do you think could credit to John Madden for the games? You know what I mean? Yeah, you could watch the game on Sunday during football season, but guess what? When football season's over, you could fire up the PlayStation, fire up the Nintendo 64, whatever it was, and, you know, go head to head playing with your favorite players, with your buddies. They always had some crazy things you could do where you could boost all your players to 99 overall and just have 3,000 sacks in a game because your defensive line is so good, and have, you know, 500 yards receiving with your wide receiver. And, you know, stuff like that's fun when you're a kid. Like, say you could go head to head with your buddies. Nowadays you can do full seasons with your friends where they're playing their own team and you're playing your team. So, you know, I wonder how much of that, I think you could probably a lot of it credit John Madden, you know, in the invention of his video game. I know before that they had, I think, Bill Walsh football, but Madden was kind of different when it first started, and it evolved as well. It's kind of hit, you know, maybe a bit of a plateau or a brick wall, and it's kind of on its way down. But you know, it in its prime and its heyday, it was probably one of the best games. I mean, you didn't mind paying and buying the same game year in and year out. Granted, back then it was like $20-$25 versus $60 now, but still. You know, and it was fun when he was on the call on the video game. He was always fun. I know people have talked about, they, when they think of John Madden, they think of the Thanksgiving Day game with him and Pat Summerall. That's where I first heard of a turducken. It was John Madden calling a Lions game a turkey, or a chicken inside of a duck inside of a turkey, and just called the game with a lot of joy, and did a lot of cool things for the game of football. You know, whether it's just something as small as making a small cameo in a game, in a movie like the Little Giants, that, you know, people our age all love that movie, or whatever it was. You just had fun doing it, and he was a big contributor to this game. And you know, it's sad that he passed away, but you know, his legacy will live on for quite some time.
Yeah, and the thing about the man, I mean, it's not his fault it's not evolving.
Oh, that's, no, for sure, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, like, a lot of it too is he just let him use his name.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, hey, do you want us to use the name? Can you do this? And he said, yeah. But look, still credit to him for doing that. The thing that I find most interesting about hearing people that have known John Madden when he was a coach and even as a broadcaster, and you can hear it, is that, like, I heard this story from Vin Scully yesterday when he was on NFL Network. Vin Scully was calling a John Madden game that he was coaching with the Raiders, and like an hour before the game, he's up in the press box just like making jokes with all the reporters, just hanging out with the reporters, like an hour before a big game. And Vince Scully was like, this is unbelievable, like, how is this head coach ready to play in, I can't remember what game, I don't know, if think it was a conference championship, but how can this coach in this big game be like hanging out with the reporters, cracking jokes and doing everything like an hour before? And the point is that a lot of people that have known him have said that a lot of people take the result of a football game, coaches and like calling the game, as life or death. Like, that's the only thing that matters when you're coaching it. You see a lot of coaches do that, announcers, like, football is a war, is all this. Like, football is a game. It's not a war. And John Madden knew that it was a game. Yes, he poured his whole life into football and loved it more than anything. But in the end, he still knew that it was a game, and he didn't take it, quote unquote, like, too seriously. Yes, he still wanted to succeed and do all of that, but he knew what it was, and he devoted his life to it, and he wasn't just, like, saying what it wasn't, which you hear some announcers say now, a ton of announcers say now, and coaches and all that stuff. He was just like, you know what? It is what it is. Whatever the outcome is, it is, and I'm going to do my best, and whatever happens, happens. And that's, I think, that is like a brush of fresh air that I think we need when it comes to announcing, when I think it comes to, when it comes to just coaches in general, just every, like, look at how he would act, and then take for like Belichick, for example, or Saban. It's just like they're ready to just, something bad happens, they're ready to go off. Just seems like they're ready to just go off a bridge. Doesn't sound like he was like that. So that's good. And I also would wish that, like, some of these announcers now, like Romo was the hot cup of tea. I've been saying this, but that people are definitely turning on Romo as a broadcaster.
Yeah.
We've seen that. I think since the contract, he's mailed it in. I'm not saying he's not preparing as much, but he's like, I got paid for this. I got security. I can kind of act how I want. And it's just like kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. But, and I'd say the new hot cup of tea is Greg Olson.
Yeah.
I like Greg Olson, but I think more people need to look at, go back, and not saying you need to emulate him, but just see how John Madden called the game. It doesn't have to be how he explained X's and O's. Like, not everything is calling the play right, like, before the thing to make you look right. Like, people thought that was, just explain it in a way where people are going to know what's going on and have fun. Like, I don't really think there's a lot of people that have, now the announcers have fun when they're calling games, but they're not giving the impression of the viewer that I think that they're just like sitting around talking about football. They want to call the play. They want to do this stuff. Just like talk about it in an easy way. I think we're lacking greatly on that right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the thing with John Madden was he could appeal to the casual fan. Right? Mm-hmm. He's, you know, like you said, he explained the game in a way to where, like, he was trying to teach it to somebody that maybe didn't know the game, you know, or could take it up a notch to guys that have been around the game or know the game, or, you know, whatever. He could talk to all different levels. And I think that's what makes a good coach too, is being able to, you know, to appeal to all different types of players, all different skill levels of players, all different players that have, you know, different levels of knowledge of the game. And I think that was one of the things that really stuck out, was that, like I said, he could appeal to the casual fan or the diehard fan, and he seemed like he was having fun while doing it. He enjoyed it while he was doing it, where some of these guys, like you said, they kind of go in there week in, week out. Yeah, they may have energy, or they may have some gusto to go along with their calls, but are they really enjoying it, really having a good time explaining the game or calling the game? And I think that's what was so cool about John Madden.
I will also say, like, I mean, I don't remember John Madden, like, I was younger, but I remember him calling games, but it's different now. Like, you're probably the same way. I can remember, like, a lot of games, or while you're watching a game, like, the color commentator says something just completely totally wrong. Like, if he, if it's about the Browns or whatever, whoever, they're like, that's just not right. Like, yeah, you have, that is wrong. And you yell at the announcers, like, no, that's not what's going on. I don't probably think that really happened a lot with John Madden. Like, I feel like a lot more announcers now, that happens going on there. But
and if he did get something wrong, he would be the one that would point it out and let you know, hey, you know, maybe I'm not that smart all the time. You know, I missed that one, or whatever it may be. So that, you know, that he was always very self-deprecating in a funny way. You know, could laugh at himself, didn't take himself too seriously. And, you know, I think that's another thing that people enjoy and people like.
Yes. All right. One last thing before we go. This is some breaking news, I guess you could say. So yesterday we had the Cheez-It shower for Dabo. Mm-hmm. We had the Idaho potato shower for the Wyoming coach. I think there was another food one that happened.
The French fry bowl. Oh, you just said that.
The Idaho potato bowl. I saw people pretty disappointed that, I think Monday morning, that when Western Michigan won in the Quick Lane Bowl, they didn't dump a bunch of car oil on them. in that one. But today, kickoff 25 minutes, so it's probably after you're listening to this. The Duke's Mayo Bowl is on. So people are wondering, are we going to get a mayonnaise Gatorade bath? Shane Beamer and Mack Brown have both said they are willing. I don't know if you saw that or they would accept that. And now we see something from Lauren Brownlow, who is a radio personality in Raleigh, North Carolina, on WRAL. She says that she has been told by some sources that the mayonnaise dump on the winning head coach will be after the trophy ceremony, and it will be 4.5 gallons of Duke's mayonnaise slightly watered down. And that's, I'm a big mayo guy. I like mayo. I don't know what your stance is on mayo, but that sounds disgusting.
The watered down mayo, absolutely. I know. I'm not a huge mayo guy, but I definitely think it belongs on certain things. You know, a good sandwich, a good chicken sandwich with some mayo. I'll put a little mayo on a burger. But yeah, watered down mayonnaise sounds absolutely like, let's dump ketchup water on somebody and see how they like that. That might be one of the grossest things you can do. Speaking of these Gatorade baths, I don't know if you saw the Bob Stoops interview. You know, he owns a tequila company now.
Yeah.
And one of the reporters asked, you know, how would you feel about a tequila bath instead of the Gatorade bath if you win? And he was like, shoot, I think it'd be a great idea. I think that's definitely something we should look at. And he followed that up with, what's the administration going to do? Fire me? Which was, you know, absolutely hilarious. A great line. He definitely looks like a guy that's just fully enjoying retirement. He came out for his one game, had a great showing last night. And now he's going to go back to sipping tequila, smoking cigars, and living his best life. But I thought that line was pretty funny of him saying, you know, what are they going to do, fire me?
I know, and maybe working next to Urban Meyer next year on Fox.
Maybe.
Who knows? They could add one more person to a small desk because they don't have – it's like they don't have enough. But, no, yeah, he is living his best life out there. That is for sure. And, look, I'll say this. That's not the last time that Bob Stoops is going to coach a game for Oklahoma. Brett Venables is going to get fired or something, and he's going to have to fill in and coach in the bowl game again in like 4 or 5 years. That's what I think is going to happen. But
All right.
That's
calling
it. Calling the shot. He's going to do a Barry Alvarez, because Barry Alvarez did it like twice, I think.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to be it for us. Thanks everybody for listening. Have a happy new year, everybody. And we'll talk to you on Monday.